Welcome to the BritLit podcast, a fortnightly show about news and views from British books and publishing. This is episode 9 for Thursday, the 25th of January, 2018, and our guest today is YA author Maggie Harcourt. Maggie wrote one of my very favourite books of 2017, and I'll be talking to her about that novel, as well as her forthcoming book and our shared fangirling tendencies. But first, some news from the BritLit podcast. We have merch! Head over to britlitblog.com/merch to buy everything from tote bags and t-shirts to mugs and water bottles with the BritLit podcast logo on them. There's also another cool design some of you will like, a tribute to Jane and Anne and Emily and Charlotte. I'd love to keep this podcast ad-free, and you can help make that happen by shopping for merch as well as supporting the podcast on Patreon. Now let's hear from Maggie Harcourt, author of Unconventional and the forthcoming Theatrical. Among other things, we talked about a handy tip for eavesdropping in public, how writing fan fiction can give writers a start, and the emotional honesty of teenage readers. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. I loved Unconventional, as you know.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I also really love its cover, and there's a phrase on it, everyone's a fan of someone, it says. So
yes.
Here's my question for you. Who are you a fan of?
I tend to be very into things. My friends say I'm quite kind of obsessive and faddy. When I fall in love with something, then I'm really, you know, obsessed with it. Well, one of my favourite books, which, having read Unconventional, you will probably have figured this out, is Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell by Susanna Clarke. I'm an enormous fan of her work and her writing. And so there's a lot of kind of in-jokes and references to it and the television adaptation that we had in the UK. So that was a fantastic adaptation. So I'm a big fan of her writing. I love all of the kind of Marvel comics and films and all of that kind of thing. There's lots of music I like. I love theatre. It just, you know, it goes on and on. It depends very much on what kind of day that you catch me.
What about when you were a teenager?
Yes, I think so. But I grew up in West Wales. It was quite, not isolated, but it was a much kind of quieter town where I grew up. And, you know, we had one cinema that showed one film a week, and we had a very small library. And it was very quiet, and it was difficult to kind of be connected to things. And I think that was why I started writing, because I found it so difficult to find the stories that I wanted to read and find kind of stories that had people that I recognised as being my friends or like my friends in them. So I guess that kind of obsessive, oh, I have found a thing and I love it and I must hold on to it really, really tightly, came from that, from it being difficult to find that stuff. And of course it's not now, which is amazing. It's brilliant that if you're interested in something, you can go online and you can find that community. And whether that's films or books or it's comics, and you know, the community is there, it exists. You have book bloggers that are all into different books and they all have their different things they champion. You have all the cosplayers, you have all the fanfic writers. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I actually got into Twitter because I'm a massive West Wing fan, and I just finished the show around the time that Twitter was kind of coming into its own. And that's how I discovered a whole community of West Wing fans, and then later, of course, the book world.
I was very late to the West Wing. I only watched it a couple of years ago. I got the box set of all of them and just watched it straight through. So I adore it.
I'm actually helping organise the first ever West Wing convention next year. And I was wondering if Lexi would have any advice for me, or if her dad would have any advice for me.
Have a lot of notes, write everything down. Conventions are a lot about lists and planning and having a plan B and a plan C and a plan D. It's write everything down and have a paper trail for literally everything. But the other thing is to remember to enjoy yourself, because conventions are an awful lot of hard work, but they are about celebration. And if you don't enjoy being part of it as well, then there's no point. It's kind of a double-edged sword, organizing a convention for something you love.
I know, I'm a little nervous, but hopefully it'll be worth it. So it sounds like the convention world is a world that you know pretty well. Did you have to go and research it, or did you mostly write from your own experience?
No, a lot of it came from my own experience because I've been involved in a few conventions over here. I mean, I went to my first convention in 2010 and I just kind of went along because I knew that one of my favorite authors was involved in it and was helping to organize it. And I loved the world and I kind of walked in and felt like I'd met a load of people that I belonged with, because I went knowing absolutely no one. I went on my own, not knowing a soul. And I just met so many amazing people. So I went to a lot more, and you end up having a group of friends that you see at conventions. You may not see them at all any of the rest of the year. You just see each other there. And so you walk into the hotel and you put your stuff in your room, and then you go and you look for your convention friends. So I did that for a few years, and then I really wanted to start getting involved. So I started helping out and volunteering at a couple, and then ended up helping to run operations and the day-to-day part of the convention for a large one that took place in 2013. So that was eye-opening. It was the hardest I've ever worked, but it was so much fun. I was part of the team. I wasn't actually the one at the top of the tree. I was not the boss. That was an amazing experience, and that's really where the idea for Unconventional came from. It was this idea that you do have the friendships, that you may see each other 6 or 7 times across 6 months, but then not for another year, depending on who's going to where the conventions are. And I thought that's a really interesting way to tell particularly a love story, and to have this group that is always moving and always doing different things and is really focused and intense. Because again, at a convention, your friendship is condensed down to a weekend or a couple of days. And I thought that's such an interesting environment to tell a story in, especially a love story, and especially a YA love story.
Yeah, with all the intensity and the emotion.
Yeah, and I just find conventions really inspiring. I love seeing people kind of running around dressed as their favorite characters if they're in cosplay, or getting into really heated debates about books and television and films and things they love, you know, between panels and in the bar. You'll see people come out of panels that they've been in and they're still carrying on the conversation.
And are you a fan fiction reader, or even a fan fiction writer secretly?
I read a little bit. I don't read a huge amount because there's just so much. But I've, like a lot of writers, I started by writing fan fiction before it even was known as fan fiction, because I'm that old. You get all of these younger writers coming through and talking about fan fiction and you go, yeah, but I was doing that in my diary. It just wasn't online. Some of the first things that I wrote that were any sensible length were fan fiction. They were quite niche. I did have an entire diary that was full of West Side Story fan fiction.
Wow.
Yes, quite niche. All sort of focus around the character of Action. Like I said, it was niche. I'm quite glad the internet wasn't really a thing then.
Do you still have it?
I don't, thankfully. I burned it along with many teenage diaries when I was about 17. Oh, could you imagine, though, to go back and look at my intense West Side Story fan fiction now.
When I was 11 or 12, I was really into Neighbours. For our listeners, that's a pretty bad Australian soap opera that was big in the 90s and is still going in the UK. And I've actually just discovered today there's a whole load of podcasts about Neighbours too, so I might have to get into those. I was probably 11 or 12 and I wanted to write. I had this itch to write, but I didn't know how or what about. And so basically I kind of wrote some version of Neighbours, but I knew enough to know you can't out and out plagiarize. I was like, what should I call it instead? So I was like, I know, Friends and Lovers.
Which sounds like a soap in itself.
It was really incredibly bad. I don't have that anymore either, and I'm quite grateful.
But that's the wonderful thing about fanfic. If you know that you want to write, but perhaps you're not confident about building a world or developing characters, but there's a story that you want to tell, there is no reason that you can't write fanfic of a story that you love and you know, and borrow that world. I mean, obviously, you know, you can't publish it or do anything like that with it, but it gives you the confidence to start writing and to start discovering who you are as a writer. I think that's a fantastic thing.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of our homework too in English classes was essentially fan fiction, but not called that. It would be, you know, write an alternative ending for the novel or write a diary of one of the characters. And that's basically fan fiction too.
Yes, it is. And it's a really good way of exploring what makes you want to write and how you want to write and how to tell the stories you want to tell. So many of the writers that I know wrote fan fiction, whether we knew that it was fan fiction or not. And the younger authors have maybe put some online. I know Lucy Saxon in particular wrote a lot of fan fiction online. Some of it's been taken down, some of it's still up. But, you know, it's out there. I think it's a great tool.
Speaking of other writers, apparently there's some real life UK YA authors in Unconventional. Is that right?
Yes, there's a couple of cameos, because you can't have conventions without YA writers. You can't have literary conventions without them being there. So, yes, when I was writing it, I had this idea of putting in cameos. So I sent these emails to Will Hill and Non Pratt and Melinda Salisbury and said, I'm writing a thing. Do you want to be in it? And to their credit, they all went, yeah. Will and Non had to write fake blurbs for the book within a book as well as part of the story. So when I sent them an email going, could you write a sort of a blurb for this book that's kind of about this stuff, got magic and things in it, and just write a blurb for it. And they did, which is how supportive and great community YA authors in the UK are.
Yeah, I definitely get a sense from that just on Twitter, how supportive everyone is of each other, which is great.
Yeah, it is. It's a lovely community to be part of. We're very lucky.
So you're obviously not a teenager. How do you stay young? Is it mostly by reading YA novels? Do you have kids in your life that you give your books to for them to check the vocabulary? Or
I do have a couple of younger cousins. My youngest cousin is 17 now, which makes me feel quite grown up, because I remember going to see her when she was a tiny newborn baby. And now she's grumpy and 17 and doesn't want anything to do with me. I think a lot of us have a tendency to mentally or emotionally stop in our teens. You know, you have that moment where you go, oh gosh, I'm not 17 or 18 anymore. I'm, you know, in my 30s or in my 40s. I'm an adult now. There is that little piece of you, I think, that stays at that age. So being able to tap into that is quite nice. I eavesdrop a lot as well. So that's always fun. Listening to what people say. You'd be amazed what people will say on a train or on a bus or just somewhere around you if you've got headphones in. You don't have to be listening to anything.
That's clever. I never thought of doing that.
Yeah, it's good because people will talk. And all you're doing is just sort of listening for the kind of things they talk about. You're not focusing in on their conversation and trying to work out things about them. You're just listening to how they talk and the kind of things they talk about. You know, you ride enough buses where there are teenagers coming home from school and you will hear an awful lot. There's all of that kind of thing. I try and soak stuff up. And I'm interested in so many things that YA readers enjoy anyway, other YA books, TV shows, films, music, all of that kind of thing. It all feeds in.
Yeah, I think for me, the thing about YA is the intensity of emotion. Everything's life or death. Everything is such a big emotional deal. And I'm a very emotional person. And so it works for me to read YA, where I can get involved and I can let my emotions take over, and that's fine.
It is. It's emotional honesty, which I think you get more in YA than anything else, because YA readers, you know, they're not stupid. They are really intelligent and they are really keyed into the things that matter to them. And they are not going to let you get away with any kind of edging around things. They want you to be honest. They want to either be involved in a character's emotions and feelings or to have a new point of view presented to them and to really get involved in the story and the book. And I think that's a fantastic challenge as a writer, to have to deal with that and to know that you can't back away from it. It's wonderful.
You have a new book coming out.
So yes, my next book comes out in the summer. Yes, and that is theatrical.
Yeah, so can you tell us a bit about that one?
Another thing that I do love is theatre. I've loved theatre since I was very, very little, kind of going to the theatre, but I've always been interested in what happens backstage. In much the same way as Unconventional is about conventions, but behind the scenes, Theatrical is set backstage at a theatre, and it follows 17-year-old Hope Parker, who is desperate to be a deputy stage manager. That's what she's always wanted to do. And she gets a placement at her local professional theatre. And she is just desperate to prove herself. And it's kind of following her and all of the people that she meets there and how she's juggling that sort of internship, that placement with her home life. And it's been huge fun to write. I've loved writing it. And that one I got to do some research for as well.
Theatre kids, that's also a very intense relationship. You're together for a certain amount of time and you get to know each other really well under a lot of pressure, and then it sort of maybe dies down again after the production's over.
But I mean, obviously, as Unconventional was told across 6 months, it was spread across a whole convention season. This is very much condensed down. This is a couple of weeks in the run-up to the opening to a brand new show. It is quite full on, but it has been fantastic to get into that world.
How did you do research? Did you get involved in the production of a play or?
A couple of years ago, I went to a summer school at my local theatre. I live in Bath, and we have a wonderful theatre called the Theatre Royal Bath, which is one of these really beautiful old theatres that we have in Britain. And this was a summer school that they ran in theatre production, and the idea was that it taught you how to put together a professional production from choosing a play and casting it all the way through to pitching it to a theatre and to producers. And it was really intense, but we learned about everything. We learned about, you know, how to pick a play and how you cast it, how you budget it, how you design for it. But the thing that really interested me was the idea of stage management, because I knew nothing about it. I'd seen things like assistant stage manager in program credits, but I had no idea what they did. And actually, they're kind of everywhere in a production, but you never see them. And I was so fascinated by the idea of that, comparing with the people that want to be actors. You kind of understand why somebody would want to be an actor and perform and be out on the stage, but why do people want to be stage managers? What drives that? Because it's a really hard job. And I was just so interested in it. And I thought, there's a story here. There's an idea here. That's kind of where that idea came from, the idea of telling Hope's story. That was research. And I've been able to go to lots of amazing productions and go, oh, this is research. I'm going to watch this production because this is research. Just all of that, really, and kind of going and trying to poke around theatres. I was able to go and tour the backstage of the Bristol Old Vic, which is an extraordinary theatre. It's just celebrated its 250th anniversary, and it's absolutely gorgeous. And I sent them an email saying, I'm writing a book about theatre. Can I come and have a look backstage? And so they invited me back and took me around and let me go kind of clambering all over the place, which was, you know, incredible. So there's been a lot of that kind of thing that's gone into there. And unfortunately, my editor has sort of been reading big sections of the book and going, there's just too much detail. We don't need all of this. So yes, we're trimming it a bit.
So did you go on the course originally with a thought to researching a book, or were you interested in being involved in theatre yourself?
It was just one of those things that you sort of see and you think, I really want to do that. I love theatre and I would just like to go and have a go, in much the same way as I went to my first convention because I just really wanted to go. And I think that that's a really nice thing to do, to tell yourself, I just want to go and do that. You know, I'm in a position where I can at the moment, so I'm going to do it, because you get so much out of it, not just in terms of ideas if you are, you know, a writer. You learn so much. It's so much fun. And I met some amazing people as well when I was doing that. And two of the people on that course are now two of my really, really good friends. So it's lovely to be able to do that, because you meet people that maybe you wouldn't otherwise.
As you know, Unconventional is one of my favourite books of 2017. So I was wondering, and this might be hard off the top of your head, but if you were going to make a list of favourite books of 2017, what would be on that?
Oh, gosh, that is tricky. I actually keep a reading diary, which is a thing I started to do a couple of years ago, just to keep track of the books I read in any given year. Off the top of my head, I can't remember if it came out in hardback this year or if it came out at the end of last year, but it's just come out in paperback. One of the books I absolutely loved was Katie Kahn's Hold Back the Stars.
I've just been reading about that. It sounds amazing.
It's absolutely gorgeous. Yeah, it was pitched, I think, as One Day Meets Gravity. It's sort of relationship, but it's in space, and it's wonderful. I love her world. I love her characters. It's just such a beautiful book. So I love that one. I've read things like Catherine Webber's Wing Jones, which was just wonderful and inspirational, and I love her writing. I've got quite into the Outlander books, actually. I'm very late to those, but I've been reading those. Oh, The Loneliest Girl in the Universe. That was another great one by Lauren James. That's another YA. And that's, again, actually set in space.
I heard about that one way back last January. I think people were looking forward to it for months.
Mm.
And I think it's getting published in the US.
Brilliant. I was blown away by The Hate U Give as well. I read that when that came out over here. And I think that the really remarkable thing about that is her voice. And her voice is so clear and just so real. It's incredible to think that that's her first book. You know, that's a debut, and she has that command of voice straight off the bat. It's wonderful.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about?
I'd love to know, actually, because you've been so kind about Unconventional. I'd love to know who your favourite character is, because people seem to kind of fall into a couple of different camps, and I'm always interested.
I like Lexi a lot. There was such a good cast of characters. I don't remember not liking any of them. One of the things about it that's really British and that I really appreciated is how many missed moments there were between them, and how Lexi would almost speak to him or almost do something and then bottle it out. Which I haven't read that much American YA, but my impression in general is that there's a lot more fireworks and magic in American YA, which is lovely to read about, but doesn't feel like my teenage years. Whereas her general awkwardness with him and stuff is felt a lot more realistic to me. But her best friend, I've forgotten what her name is, or
Sam.
Her best convention friend, yes, I also enjoyed too. They were all just wonderfully drawn characters.
But there is a connection between Unconventional and theatrical as well. So you'll have to kind of keep an eye out for that. They're not...
So some of the characters cross over.
Yeah, there's a couple of little cameos that pop up, because it's not a direct sequel to Unconventional, but there's very much a feeling that it's in the same world, which is quite nice and quite fun for me.
Because I write as well, and you spent all this time with characters that you've created. It's kind of a shame to leave them behind. So even if you're not doing a real sequel, it's quite fun to write about them again.
Yeah, I think actually that's true of readers as well. I think that's why we like the idea of writing fanfic, because, you know, you do get so invested in characters, particularly things like the Harry Potter books that, you know, people have grown up with and they've gone on for years and years. And that you do spend so much time with these characters that you don't want to let go of them. And you just want there to be more stories. And that's a nice thing. The idea of continuing telling stories.
I suppose that's why series are so popular, not just Harry Potter, but in the middle grade world especially, there seem to be a lot of series. I suppose that's why people love the characters and they don't want to let them go.
No, there are so many characters that I wouldn't want to let go either. I find it very difficult to sort of get to the end of Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell and let them go, because that's a tremendous book. Those are wonderful characters that are kind of Dickensian almost.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for this. It's been really, really lovely.
The best thing about this podcast actually is contacting the people whose books I've loved and being able to speak to them and hear about their inspiration. It's been really fun. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been really, really nice. Thank you for having me.
You can follow Maggie on Twitter at Maggie Harcourt and buy Unconventional wherever books are sold in the UK and on bookdepository.com elsewhere. You can also pre-order Theatrical from the same places. The West Wing convention I mentioned will take place in September 2018, and you can find more details at westwingweekend.com. And now for our usual segment on new books out this fortnight. If you enjoyed Me Before You and its sequel After You, you'll be glad to know that the third book in the series by Jojo Moyes, called Still Me, is out today in the UK and next week in the US. Also published today is The Feed by Nick Clark Window. It's a dystopian novel of sorts, imagining what happens when a network everyone relies on for information and human connection goes down. It's out today in the UK and in March in the US. Eleanor Oliphant Is Completely Fine by Gail Honeyman is out in paperback today, so if you've been waiting for that to get hold of it, now's your chance. Trying by Emily Phillips sounds interesting. Olivia and Felix are trying for a baby. They've moved to the suburbs and they monitor her cycle and their sex life with military precision, but nothing. Meanwhile, vying for a promotion at work under the very attentive watch of a new boss sends Olivia down a dangerous road where she could risk it all. I could definitely imagine this kind of book as pure heartbreak, so I'm particularly interested that this is pitched as a hugely funny, searingly honest comedy. As I tape this, I'm eagerly awaiting my copy of I Am Thunder by Mohammed Khan, also out today. It's a YA novel about 15-year-old Muzna Salim, who dreams of being a writer. Her parents won't hear of it, though. They want her to become a doctor and marry a cousin from Pakistan. In a new South London school, she struggles with bullies, prejudice, and racism, along with teenage angst of all kinds, until the school hottie, Arif, takes an interest in her. But Arif brings his own trouble. I've seen rave reviews about this book on Twitter already, and I can't wait to dig in. I could keep talking about books forever, but that's it for now. To continue the conversation, you can follow the podcast on Twitter and Instagram at Britlit Podcast. As always, you can find links to all the books mentioned in this episode at britlitblog.com. Don't forget to head over to britlitblog.com/merch to get your mugs and t-shirts. And if you want to support the show further, check out patreon.com/britlitblog. Reviews and ratings on iTunes or wherever else you found the podcast always help too. As always, you're also more than welcome to drop me an email to talkbooks at britlitpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, and let's talk books again soon.